As we report on environmental disasters caused by the U.S. military in Okinawa, we should note that the track record of the U.S. in causing industrial ground contamination is no better at home. Love Canal was a working-class planned suburb of Niagara Falls, New York, until it became known as America's toxic zip code, 14304. In the 40s and 50s, the Hooker Chemical Company dumped more than 20,000 tons of toxic waste into the ground at the site, which continued to be developed upon well into the 70s. Residents had complained about health problems for years, but the protest movement, led by women like Lois Gibbs, reached a fever pitch in 1978. Activism eventually led to a national conversation about toxic waste sites and the passage of the EPA Superfund legislation. Historian Richard Newman wrote a book about the disaster called Love Canal, A Toxic History from Colonial Times to the Present. Richard, welcome to The Takeaway.
It's great to be with you.
When was it first discovered that Love Canal might be a toxic waste zone?
Well, the story here is very much like what you see in Flint, where what we now know of as the environmental disaster was actually part of a narrative of community discord and unrest for a couple of years. So Love Canal is built up as a residential zone in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, and young working middle-class families are actually pretty happy, but there's always this undercurrent of environmental unrest because weird things happen in Love Canal. Manhole covers will explode spontaneously. Families and children get chemical burns playing on the grass outside of baseball diamonds, and they complain to politicians and administrators and health officials. And so throughout the 70s, you see this steady current of complaints. But after studying the problems, officials usually say, we have the matter contained, we're going to make some improvements. And only in the late 1970s, when these residential complaints reach a fever pitch, do state health officials do a massive study. And in August of 1978, they release the results saying that there's a health peril in Niagara Falls. They've discovered that there are roughly 200 toxic chemicals buried beneath the landscape. There are elevated levels of miscarriage, birth defects, elevated levels of suicide and depression in the neighborhood. And so the response of health officials is to not only say that there's a real problem in the area, but to evacuate a small minority of families. But of course, this creates more consternation and even hysteria because the rest of the residents living in the 10-block area say, well, what about us?
When did the federal government assert its authority in the Love Canal case and in others like it?
EPA officials had been aware of some of the leaking dump site problems in the mid to late 70s, but they were always worried about setting a precedent. Only after 1978 and the big blow-up that features residents becoming media darlings and organizing a whole series of protest movements does the federal government get really interested in Love Canal. But still then, it takes a couple of years of activism to get the whole neighborhood evacuated. So President Carter issues the first emergency declaration in early August of 1978, and that provides for the evacuation of about 25% of the neighborhood. A second emergency declaration by the president in May of 1980 results in the temporary and then the full and complete evacuation of the remaining 75% of the homeowners and the renters. And then Superfund is passed in December of 1980. But it's really interesting to think about what the federal government would have done if there wasn't an activist movement pushing all along. And so people like Lois Gibbs and this group of unheralded women are really responsible for forcing congressmen, presidential officials, health officials to really come to terms with the Love Canal disaster.
Have you seen the chain link, the famous chain link around the Superfund site?
Well, that's why I first got interested in the book. It was really fantastical. There's this massive chain link fence around what looks like a school playground. The grass is cut in the summer. There are shrubs and trees. Birds land and chirp. It's actually fairly pretty. There's no signage on the fence itself that says this is Love Canal, site of America's worst man-made environmental disaster. And over the last 30 years, I discovered that there was an amazing debate about resettling the landscape. Niagara Falls is a deindustrializing city. Folks wanted to get some of those tax rolls bolstered, and so they ended up refurbishing and resettling about 250 homes north of the dump. And so if you go back today, what you will see is on one side of the neighborhood, the chain link fence around the dump, and on the other side of the neighborhood, homes that are inhabited.
It's not an accident, I suppose, that this disaster took place on one side of this huge freshwater watershed in North America called the Great Lakes. Facing the Love Canal zone geographically is Flint, Michigan, over on the other side of Lake Huron. Is this a story of what industrial capitalism did to this pristine freshwater ecosystem?
The thing that I think takes us beyond industrial capitalism is culture. At Love Canal in Flint, Michigan, what you see is the idea that certain communities are written out of politics, of civic discourse. In places around Niagara Falls where you see these dumping grounds, you see lower middle class and lower income populations. You see African Americans in Flint, Michigan, in the inner city where you see this horrible lead crisis. There's a whole century-long history associated with industrial capitalism of political neglect that has taken these people out of the political equation. And so again, when I talk to people now, I say we shouldn't just focus on the environmental disaster at Love Canal. We should focus in on the remedy, which was the incredible protest movement that these unheralded and politically insignificant people created. And in the same way, you can see that going on in Flint, Michigan. This isn't just about one city. This is about the problem of environmental neglect in all cities. And so soon after the issue popped up in Flint, Michigan, you saw people in Newark, in Philadelphia, across the country talking about the problem of lead poisoning in their communities. That's exactly what happened in Love Canal. As soon as the issue appeared in the summer of 1978, people around the country started investigating hazardous waste sites in their own backyard. That was the impetus for a national law like Superfund. And so hopefully that's what's going to happen at Flint, Michigan, is this will not be viewed as a one-off problem, but as a symbol for a whole series of problems.
Richard Newman is a historian and author of Love Canal, A Toxic History from Colonial Times to the Present. Thanks so much, Richard.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.